Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. It is Sunday night, and that's the mayor's slap of the bass. Means it's time for the weekend wrap, surveying the squared circle, presented to you by the Pugilist Corner. Well, hey, all I can say is, bomb squad. Hey, you've done it again. Seventh round, behind on every card. We get another knockout. Rather Barnes, Brahma himself, Mr. Deontay Wilder. Well, we got a great panel tonight. John Scully will be back. The champ himself, Layman Brewster, will be here. And Miss Melissa Smith, along with the professor. So let's get right on with the show here. I'm going to dial up Mr. Scully. And Scully will give us some of his observations. We'll talk a little bit more about things coming. And we'll see what's going on. So, just waiting for Scully to pick up here.
Hello.
Hey there, Mr. Scully. What's going on, man?
Nah, everything's good. How you doing?
Oh, doing great, man. Doing great. How are things with you? And I trust you're back at home from another week of travel down there in Texas.
Yes, yep. I'm back home. Everything's good. I'm getting back on track tomorrow.
All right. Yeah, you want to tell us a little bit about the event in Texas and did you get an award down there? Or you present one or something?
I was presenting. Actually, it was kind of a cool thing. They have the Rio Grande Valley Hall of Fame, Boxing Hall of Fame Awards, and a really nice event. And Andrew Maynard, who won the gold medal in the 1988 Olympics. Him and I were good friends. We still are. And they brought me down as a surprise to be the presenter for him. So he had no idea I was coming. I actually have it on my YouTube channel. I have the video where I the night before they had like a little fiesta at the neighbor's house. And I went over and I surprised him there, which was kind of nice. And so he got in. And the funny thing, I was at the dais and I had my seat and I sat next to this guy, kid, he looked like he was about 15 and he had a belt in front of him. And I figured he was one of the local amateur kids and they were giving him an award or something. And I started talking to him and come to find out it was Brandon Figueroa, who's the WBA super bantamweight champion. He just fought last night on the pay-per-view card.
Yeah.
And just the craziest thing, he looked like, I thought he was just a young kid, and it turns out he's undefeated and, a very good fighter. So he was there, and Raul Marquez was there, and a bunch of local guys down there, good fighters, and, it was a very nice trip.
Did you happen to talk to Raul, Raul Marquez?
We talked quite a bit, actually.
Did you talk about his son? I know his son was doing very well in the amateurs for a while.
Right. Well, his son actually just lost in the qualifier. See, the Olympic trials are coming up in December, the middle of December, and I'll be down there in Lake Charles, Louisiana. And I'm actually doing an amateur boxing reunion while I'm there. and Raul's coming over. And his son fought in the qualifier, which I believe was held in Oxnard a couple weeks ago or a week ago. And he his son actually lost to the guy, I forget his name, but the guy is actually the favorite to make the Olympic team next year. So, you know, and he said he's going to stay amateur and go for another 4 years and, you know, keep trying to gain experience. So, Raul, you know, he's a very dedicated coach. He does a lot of good work with his son. And so I'm sure people are going to hear about his son over the next 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. We've had Raul on the queue this morning a couple of times. As a matter of fact, I just sent him a text. Just kind of glad you brought that up. You also mentioned the amateur boxing, the amateur program. What's going on with your guys up there in New England?
Well, we just, you know, like I said, I've been gone and I've been doing the different traveling. So, you know, I've been working with them sporadically over the last few weeks, you know, a couple months actually. But, you know, tomorrow I'll be really back in the swing of things. And we'll be getting ready for the Golden Gloves, which starts in the beginning of January. So that's our next, you know, that's what our next goal is. So we'll be training hard. And they'll probably compete at least one time in December as a preliminary for the Golden Gloves, which start in January.
So as you go around and, you know, I don't know how many of these guys you get to see and whatnot, but what's your thoughts on you know, the guys that are out there in our amateur ranks? How are we looking?
You know what? To be honest with you, it's very confusing now. I was just talking to somebody yesterday about this. They have different divisions. I don't know. I haven't really navigated my way through it yet, but they have different divisions of amateur. Like they have a junior division, which always was, you know, junior Olympic, 15 and under. Now they have a junior division, which is open class, elite class, but it's like 17 to 19. So that's different. I guess apparently now you can't, I think they said you can't go to the Olympics at 17 now, where it used to be you could. Like Melody Taylor, he won the gold medal when he was 17. But I believe they've changed it. You know, there's so many changes with IEBA that it's really hard to keep track. But so with the age limits and different things like that, it's really hard to tell who's who and who's doing what. And but I'll say this, on a related note, you know, with the confusion of amateur boxing, if you saw not that long ago the best super heavyweight in the United States, the kid Richard Torres, if you saw him, he got knocked out like a month ago by a professional. Did you hear about that? Did you see the video of that?
I didn't see the video, but I did hear something about it, and I couldn't understand how, you know, the amateur professional thing, how, you know, that I mean, I know they spar, but I didn't, you know, really think, you know, what was the connection there.
Well, no, the way they do it now, it's just like with the basketball, with the NBA Olympics. They have pros in the Olympics. They had pros in the last Olympics. Actually, the guy's name, he's like, I believe it's a Muslim name or a French name. The guy that David Lemieux beat for the middleweight title, whoever that was, I think it might have been Nadam. David Lemieux beat him for the IBF middleweight title a few years ago. He fought
right
in the Olympics, and he got beat. He got stopped, I believe, in the Olympics, the last Olympics, because, you know, it's just it's a crazy thing, but it's a different pace and different things like that. But when you get with the super heavyweights, guys that weigh 240, 250, it's a little different. Now, Richard Torres has been winning everything. He's been very prolific over the last two or three years. He's been winning all the big tournaments. He's been traveling to all the big tournaments. I'm friends with his father. His father's constantly posting about him on social media. You know, he's going to China. He's going here. He's going there. And he fought against a professional in some tournament or in the qualifier, actually one of the last qualifiers to make the Olympics. And he fought a guy, and the guy knocked him out. And the guy was a pro. The guy had like 7 pro fights or whatever it was, and he knocked Torres out. You know, so it's just really, really strange. I mean, just the professionals, you know, in boxing is a little different than other sports. I mean, when you say professionals, you know, and they're not sending some, you know, opponent, some guy, you know, to just turn pro to make a little extra money. I mean, they're sending guys who are solid fighters fighting against kids. And just from a psychological standpoint, you know, even I'll tell you, like when I was an amateur, I was fighting the best guys in the world as far as my weight class, you know, Darren Allen, Otis Grant, Freddie Sanchez. I mean, guys that were ranked in the top 10 in the world. And even then, you know, if you put a professional in with me, just the idea that he's a professional would have been a different, you know, approach. It would have been a different idea. So, you know, I don't know why they're doing this. I don't know what the end result is supposed to be, but I think they're slowly but surely destroying the amateur game.
Well, if like you said, because we had this same conversation 4 years ago when we were talking about putting professionals into the Olympics, you know, I guess in a sense, when you think back upon the old days, you think about the old Russian teams and things like that, these were sponsored by the state, by the country themselves. Nowadays, we don't even know who's going to coach our team, more or less. I mean, I think was it in the last Olympics, our coach was an Irish coach. You know, I mean, it wasn't that he didn't.
Right. Well, that's Billy Walsh. Billy's actually still with the program. Billy, I don't know if he's still the head coach. He was national coach. I know Billy a little bit. He was actually a great amateur back in the 80s for Ireland. I've never actually, I don't know how he got to be an American head coach, but I know he is still with the team. He's there at all the tournaments. So I assume he's going to be the head coach, or he'll be very prominent, you know, in the group there.
See, because what I'm thinking here, Scully, is, you know, if you start letting professionals in one sport, aren't you going to, I mean, how are you going to justify not letting them in all sports?
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, like I say, it's terrible. And, you know, and it started back with the Dream Team and, you know, with the basketball. That was the first, you know, when the Olympics, right. You know, they I guess the ratings started to go down after 84, and they, you know, they needed some excitement and whatever it was. So they did that, and one thing I remember, you know, and I was younger then, but even then I remember the United States, you know, they blew out like India or something. It was like Michael Jordan and this guy and that guy, and they blew out India, and you know, and they're talking, you know, like it was this great thing, and they're chanting USA, USA, and I'm saying, you know, the whole vibe is not Olympic, you know. And I can remember, and I'm sure you can, you know, when Sugar Ray Leonard was in the Olympics in 1976, and, you know, and then in 1980 with the hockey team, you know, the vibe of the Olympics was much, it was pure, and it was, you know, it was what it was supposed to be. Now, you know, it's just about corporations and money and TV, you know, ratings and different things like that. And boxing has, over the last 4 or 5 years, has went down that road. And it's, you know, to be honest, I don't think people even are aware. I mean, put it this way, I'm not aware of, like in 1983, leading up to 84, I knew who the Olympians were, who they were going to be. You know, I knew Purnell, I knew Sweet Pea, you know, all these guys. And now, in this era, I don't think the average even boxing fan knows who, other than, like me, other than Richard Torres, I don't know any amateurs in this country, you know, that are prolific. You know, I just think the whole thing has just been, I don't know if I could say destroyed, but it's heading down that road. And I think they're changing amateur boxing. They're gearing it towards pro. Even on local amateur shows, as I've told you before, on local amateur shows, I was at one 2 weeks ago, and they give out every year, they do this big amateur show, and they give out WBC belts to the winners of each fight. So it's a slow but sure indoctrination into professional boxing. The WBC has gotten involved, and the IBF has gotten involved. I don't think the WBA has yet, or the WBO, but I know the WBC is heavy into it. They even have, if you Google it, they even have like WBC amateur champion. They're all in with this. So in a nutshell, I don't think things are going to get better on that end. I think it's going to get worse and worse and worse.
But Scully, went, you know, like you said, you know, back in those days, we got to see the Olympic trials. I mean, you know, you got to, East, West, or North, South. I forget, but they divided the country into four regions.
The way it works is that was at the sports festival. They used to have East, West, North, and South. The Olympic trials has when I qualified, I won the Eastern Olympic trials. And there's the Eastern trials, and then there's the Western trials. William Guthrie won the Western trials, and I won the Eastern. So you know, they haven't broken down like that. But even that, I heard recently, like a week ago, that they're even changing that. So to, you know, in some way, but it's hard to keep track because we don't see it. You know, they're like, I'm in the game and I don't really see it. I got to really research to figure out what's going on. Whereas back in the day, you know, you had, USA versus the World on ABC. So guys like, I mean, I can remember being a young kid and watching, Johnny Bumpus and Donald Curry and John Tate and all these guys on, on Wireless Sports, amateur. And now amateurs are, you know, to the masses, they're practically invisible. You'd have to really know your stuff to know who they even are.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we also mentioned, you know, like if you want to see Olympic boxing, even out here on the West Coast, I have to stay up to 2 o'clock in the morning. So I mean, you know, I'm watching, back East, who's getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to watch boxing unless you're, you know, really a boxing fan, and you know, you don't want to be, you know, you set your TVs to record or whatever, but then, you know, during the day you got a lot of other things to do. But it does seem really sad the way that they are starting to treat the amateurs, because it's almost irrelevant. Guys now, after 5 or 10 amateur fights, oh, well, I'm ready to turn pro. Or, you know, maybe, I'm going to skip the amateurs. Well, where do you get your experience? I mean, how do you build your body up to be able to take, you know, 12 rounds or whatever particular? I mean, you know, it just seems to me that everybody seems to be taking shortcuts.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
So how do you, as a trainer or consultant, I mean, you know, when you see these things, I know you can't always speak out, because that might not happen to be your client or anything like, or something like that, but how do we instill the importance of preparation before, this system that you have to grab it all and you know, I think that, you know, we've talked about some of these deaths in the ring. I think a lot of that has a lot to do with inexperience, not only by the fighter, but also maybe by those around him.
Right. Well, you know, on that end, I'll say back in the day, there were more what I would call professional boxing people. Like they were boxing people. That was their job. That was their full-time job. Like you go to New York City. I mean, Gleason's is one of the only gyms in the whole country that's open all day. Most gyms are open, you know, when it's gym time, 5 o'clock, 5 to 7:30, whatever the case may be. But back in the day, all the gyms, Chicago, Hartford, New York, they were open from, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. You know, guys, champions would be there all day shuttling in and out, in and out, in and out. So boxing people had, that was their job to go to. They were there in the gym 10 hours a day watching fighters, teaching fighters, learning things, learning from other trainers. Young trainers would go to a gym in New York City, and they would go there all day to learn from, Ray Arcel and Freddie Brown and these different legendary trainers. Now it's just different. Guys have training camps, and, it's not the same. It's not the same. There's not as many fighters. There's not as many, guys willing to teach. You can't – nowadays I couldn't see going into a gym and just telling a guy, hey, I want to be a trainer, help me, teach me. Guys, they're not doing that. They don't have time for that. Where back in the day, you could shadow a trainer and learn on the job from him. But so we're definitely in a different era. Things move on. Things evolve for better or worse. And that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, it is kind of strange how we want to put a product in front of an audience, in front of a knowledgeable audience, but yet and still, it doesn't seem like we want to take the time to properly train these people or to make sure that they have the best in intentions. And the reason why I say that is I'm going to ask you about this upcoming Danny Jacobs fight and Chavez Jr. Once again, the state of Nevada has said that he is under suspension. The fight is in the state of Arizona, which kind of shares the same, executive board or whatever you want to call it. But first of all, do you think that this fight should take place? And what do you think about, the fact that any boards would let a fighter go in after he's tested dirty and then refuse not to take a test at all?
Right. I mean, what? I was always under the impression these last few years that the Association of Boxing Commissions was in place to handle things like this. Like if you were suspended in New York, that meant you were suspended in California. Like they upheld the other suspensions. And, so I don't know why that's not happening here. But also, just with Chavez Jr., I mean, it is what it is. He's shown blatantly no real respect for the game whatsoever, or the powers that be within the game. I don't, it's amazing that he's getting the leeway that he does. It is what it is. He's the son of the legend, and that has something to do with it. The WBC loves him, I guess, and they do favors or whatever. But it's not right, and he's a good example of the politics of boxing. He's a perfect example of that.
But what about on the other side, the opponent? I mean, I understand, you know, the money aspects and all that, but how would you trust your fighter to trust someone that is there under suspicious circumstances, to say the least?
Right. Well, of course. I mean, it's not right, and you know, and it just shows you though. I'll say this. If they were fighting for $5,000 a piece, this probably wouldn't be happening. You know, they wouldn't fight them. They wouldn't risk it. But for the kind of money they're making, you know, realistically, they probably say, hey, you know, for that kind of money, he can take something if he wants. You know, like I've talked to guys in my time who have said, if they offered me $2 million. I would let my opponent could take whatever kind of steroid he wanted to. He could take it all if I'm getting $2 million. So, you know, money has a way of changing people's ideas and perceptions also. So, you know, there's so much going on that we don't even know about behind the scenes, and we'll never probably know about. But I do know that in situations like this, money is a driving factor, and it always creates a way around things.
Well, let's talk about the fights. Were you able to watch the three fights or any of them at all?
No, I was just able to see Deontay. I had the stream going, and it you know, it's having some issues with it. So you know, I was just able to see the big fight.
Well, that was the Figueroa fight was pretty good. Leo's fight, that was not pleasant to watch at all. But Deontay Wilder, once again, behind on all four scorecards. what did you think, Scully?
You know, you felt like, even though he was losing, you felt like the power was going to come through. You know, and that's just, you know, because all things considered, you know, his strength and his punch power and Ortiz, you know, he wasn't, you know, he didn't maintain, you know, his nimbleness through the fight, and you know, he's older, and you just figured sooner or later he's going to get caught, and you know, and when he gets in, when he had already proven in their first fight that he could be hurt by Deontay, so it wasn't going to get better with age, and that's what happened. He got caught, and you know, in dramatic fashion, you know. And I think one thing I'll say, I think a lot of people who were down on Deontay over these last years, you know, he's said some stupid things, you know, he's done some stupid things. But, you know, I think he's starting to grow on people, and, you know, they appreciate he comes through. I mean, love him or hate him. I mean, the guy, he's got a killer instinct, a mean streak, big power, he's dangerous. He's not only dangerous the whole way, but he's trying to, you know, he's not one of these guys. Sometimes you see a guy and he'll sleepwalk through a fight. You know, he won't keep trying, or he won't be as explosive as normal. But, you know, Deontay, he's always trying to, he's trying to kill you at 20, you know, 12 rounds at a time. He's trying to get you out of there. So I think, you know, people are starting to kind of wake up to the fact that, you know, something special here is going on. I mean, his record, regardless, he has no Ali or Frazier or George Foreman or Holyfield or whatever on his record, but, you know, you look at the power and you look at the numbers, you know, he's dropped everybody he's fought. He's knocked out everybody he's fought other than Fury, which he came close. I think we're witnessing something very, very good, very exciting. And with the winner of the Joshua fight coming up and with Tyson Fury there, you know, I think it's over the next year, I think it's going to be an exciting time for heavyweights.
We all talked about the Tyson Fury fight, you know, when it happened, you know, that it was remarkable that Tyson Fury even got up. You spoke about Tyson Fury's herky-jerky motion and whatnot, and how it threw Deontay's timing off. Fury came out with a statement, of course, that Deontay Wilder was just a one-punch wonder and that he was going to take him to school. Do you think that herky-jerky motion and perhaps, you know, that there's been some growth in Fury's style, but I'm a little apprehensive with him doing all these extracurricular things with Conor McGregor and all that. I don't, you know, MMA, WWE, I just don't see how in a combat sport you can stretch yourself that far out. You're a professional, Scully. Maybe you can, you know, maybe you have a different outlook on that.
I mean, I think he's just trying to, he's trying to widen his audience and, you know, for better or worse, maybe worse, you know, the internet now, you know, you do something like that and it's instant. Like, you don't have to wait for it to circulate throughout the world. I mean, it's instant. You know, he could come out tomorrow. He could tonight, right now, he could say, he could put on Twitter, I would love to fight, you know, whoever the best MMA guy in the world is, you know, $50 million, I'll fight him in a boxing match. And by tomorrow, the entire fistic world would be discussing it. It wouldn't take more than a few hours for the discussions to start and for, you know, people to really look into it. So I think he's just kind of utilizing social media and, you know, he's trying to maximize his money. He can make money doing MMA. These guys are all starting to branch out and do different things. And, you know, I'm not a fan of it. You know, I understand it, but I think between this type of thing and between the, you know, the regular champ, the you know, the Mystic Champ, whatever it was called, the Emeritus Champ, and all these different things, I think the handwriting is on the wall that boxing is changing, and it's like an avalanche, and you can watch it from a distance, but you just can't stop it. Like, it's changing, and it's never going to be the same. It's never going to be what it was, you know, just 20 years ago, and it's, you know, it's unrecognizable, and it's just, you know, everybody's a champion, everybody's got a belt, everybody's a three-time champion, and, you know, and they've done nothing, they've beaten nobody. You know, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan, and I can only imagine 10 years from now what the, you know, I'll be longing for 2019 to come back based on what's going to probably happen in 10 years.
Hey, Scully. Scully, I do have Melissa on right now. She's going to be talking a little bit about us back. So, Melissa, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. That's the Iceman is on the line. So, if you guys want to exchange pleasantries before I let him go.
Yeah.
How are you? Hope you're doing good.
I'm doing very well. I hope you are as well.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
I think do I hear the professor here also? Maybe not. Anyway, Scully, why don't you give us your final thoughts for the evening, and thank you so much for coming on the show, man. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate you having me, and hope you guys have a great show tonight. And anyone, you know, if they want to talk a little boxing, I'm always on the – you can find me on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, Iceman John Scully, on all of them. And I look forward to hearing from anyone, and I guess I'll be talking to you guys next week.
All right, Scully, you have a great night, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Good night. All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Well, Melissa, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, very well indeed. You guys?
Well, we're doing fine. I was expecting the champ, but he has a medical emergency, and we'll get him back on because I know he wanted to talk about Deontay and his performance.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a couple other things, a couple other fights on there that I also wanted to talk about. Did you happen to get a chance to watch most of the program or all of the program?
Yeah, I watched, I guess, everything on the pay-per-view. I wasn't able to watch the early prelims, but certainly from 9 o'clock on last night, New York time, we were watching the fights. And, of course, you know, the Wilder-Ortiz battle was quite something.
Now, what did you think? Let's go through the pay-per-view there, because Scully was just saying that he had a chance to meet the young Figueroa at the dinner that he was doing, hosting down there in Texas. So what did you think about the split draw in that card?
I didn't love it, but you know, I guess I could see it because they were both fighting really well. But I liked Figueroa, certainly. But I don't know. I guess I have such problems with the way fights are judged. You know, there was a Smith fight earlier in the night from London on DAZN with Ranger, and I think that's his last name anyway. And that was so poorly judged that it's kind of it's kind of hard to deal with the way that fights are being scored lately.
Yeah, the WBC, I think it's the WBC. Aren't they the ones that are talking about actually using live scorecards for the
challenges? Yes, I think that's something they've been talking about to try to get over it. You know, it's sort of. You know, there's this whole thing about, well, if a person is a champion, they're somehow supposed to be scored differently than if they're not. I mean, that makes no sense to me. I mean, you see it in women's fights as well, you know, where someone who, if you're in someone else's backyard, or if they're more of a, if they have a belt or more, or have had, you know, more opportunities, somehow they're supposed to get the benefit of the doubt in the round, and I just find that to be terribly unfair. So that's certainly one of the issues in the game. Last night's card, I think on the pay-per-view, they were at least reasonably fair. I mean, it was interesting, for instance, on the Wilder card, Wilder-Ortiz, that Ortiz was up on the cards, and you can see how that would have been the case. But that's not always the case on fights, that's for sure. What was your opinion of that score?
I actually had the fight for Figueroa, but once again, you know, it was... I think it was kind of a hometown pulling for Figueroa because of, you know, the way that we know him. But I wasn't mad that it was a split draw. But
I wasn't mad either. I mean, it was not like it was a huge discrepancy. Or, you know, it was like 99-91 on the cards, and then it's suddenly a split draw. I mean, it wasn't that kind of situation. So.
No. And like I said, I mean, depending upon what you were looking for or what you want, you know,
what
you called, effective aggression, you know, or, you know, the fact that, I mean, that they actually fought. So it wasn't like, you know, you had one guy, you know, that was really standing out. So I really wasn't mad about that one. But there are some things now, just, you know, I think what I'm really getting a little annoyed at is the way that we seem to denigrate the different champions or different weight classes, and maybe it's just because I'm old school, and you know, if you're the champion of the lightweight division, then I want you to be champion of the lightweight division. I don't want you to be the paper champion. I don't want you to be the gold champion, or, you know, and if we're fighting a championship fight, I think the fight should be competitive. Now, you know, and when I go back, you know, I'm talking about, you know, how we have, well, Leo Santa Cruz is the fight that I'm talking about now, and I'm kind of talking about the Canelo fight, because we know that these guys, you know, even though they're four different weight classes and two different weight classes, eventually they're going to give up one of those titles, or they're going to be stripped of one of those titles. So it kind of makes it empty to me if you're not going to, you know, defend the title, or if you're going up knowing that you're having, you know, an inferior champion. I don't know if I guess in today those two words kind of go together, inferior champion. But are you understanding what I mean?
I think I'm hearing what you're saying. So, you know, you have some, well, look, let's look at an analogous situation. You've got in the female side of the game, you have Katie Taylor, who became the undisputed lightweight title holder. And the first thing she did after winning that was fight a super lightweight title bout. She didn't defend her lightweight title. She didn't give a rematch to Delphine Persoon, or fight any of the other lightweights who are contenders, who are the number ones for each of the, you know, the mandatories for the four belts that she won. She stepped out of her weight class. What the hell is that? She's a champion of what? And a controversial win at that. So, yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, look, Pacquiao went up in weight, how many weight classes? But he did fight them. He did at least hold the title for a while before he went up to his next weight class, right?
Yeah, he at least defended them.
But here, as I said, you got Katie Taylor, who is arguably, you know, a really sensational female fighter, but she denigrates herself and the sport by saying, hey, I'm the undisputed champion, but you know what? I'm not even going to contest as a lightweight. I'm contesting as a super lightweight. Now, the others, and in essence, you have Clarissa Shields doing the same thing. Okay, she wins the undisputed middleweight, and now she's going to another weight class. What's the point? Where are the people that she can fight at middleweight to give them a chance to take part of those belts? She's just holding it. At least Cecilia Bracus, again on the female side, who is the undisputed super welterweight, she's been having, you know, she's holding them and she has been defending them. So, I have a real problem with that, with this kind of artificial nonsense. Or what is all of this interim WBA this, or interim WBC that, and interim WBO, when somebody's already in the title? What does that even mean?
Yeah.
And I have another question. Did you ever hear of what a linear champion was 10 years ago? I never heard the term. Did you?
I still don't know what a linear champion is.
Neither do I. I never heard of the term.
You know, what is a lineal champion? You don't hold any belt, but, I mean, you know, are we talking back, you know, we're talking what you held 5 years ago or 6 years ago when you beat so-and-so, but, you know, it's what have you done for me lately?
So Muhammad Ali held a belt that somebody else then won, and then that person, so that you're tracing it through one particular belt. What belt is that? Who made the, you know, who died and made you? You know, you you king. You know what I'm saying? What belt are they talking about? What does that even mean?
Yeah,
I just don't understand.
Like I said, I still don't know. You know, I've still been asking people what the lineal champion is. You know, and everyone you ask gives you a different answer because I mean, I don't know what it is, and evidently, the boxing world doesn't know what it is, other than a name, and that's what kind of bothers me. Like you said, I mean, you know, okay, we got a lineal champ, we got a diamond champ, we got a golden jubilee belt. You know, and the thing of it is that what does the boxing public get out of it? The only thing I can see is that some sanctioning body gets a fee. The people don't understand what it means in the way of rankings. And by the way, what do rankings mean anymore?
Well, yeah, and it's ranking from whom and for what? I mean, look, as you know, I'll go back to the women's side of the game. There's a champ. Okay, you got Cecilia Bricus, who has been the undisputed champion for a few years in her weight class. One of the belts she holds is the IBF. The mandatory champion for that belt was Layla McCarter, who's a sensational boxer who's been fighting out of Las Vegas for, I don't know, almost 20 years at this point. I mean, she's like the real deal. And they have never been able to make that fight. Meanwhile, it's not like the IBF title went away. She still holds, Cecilia Bricus still holds the IBF title. So how is that even possible? If she has refused to have the mandatory, then why is she still sitting there with her title? I don't get it. I really don't understand.
Well, we're going to bring the professor in here, and maybe he'll have a little more comprehensive approach to it. Professor, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good.
That's Melissa on the line. I know you're always, she's always one of your favorite guests for us. So, Melissa. There's the professor.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Yay.
Just energized after this weekend, you know, great boxing, spectacular
yeah,
knockout.
Yeah, I have to say, that was the best I ever saw Wilder look in any fight. He really brought it.
Yeah, and not only him, it was a lot of other knockouts in boxing over the weekend. Unfortunately, his brother.
Got it. Big time.
So what was y'all diving into? It sounds like women's boxing.
Well, no, we were talking about what is with all of these belts. What the heck is a lineal champion? Who ever heard of it before? I don't know, the last couple of years, never heard of it before. And, you know, what is with all, you know, you have somebody has a title and then there's in the same weight class an interim title for the same belt. So, like, what does all of this mean? And how can somebody hold on to a title when they refuse to fight the person who's the mandatory? And what does that even mean anymore? So that's what we were hammering about, and I was saying it's the same thing on the women's side.
The franchise title?
It's like you have a title, so you have somebody who's, let's say, a lightweight with a WBA world title, and then there's something called an interim WBA world title. What does that mean in the same weight class? How do you have an interim and a title for the same weight class?
Ah, that's true. That's very
true. Why is that? How did that happen?
Because, you know, they want more sanctioning fees.
Yeah, but it's like, what does that mean for the sports? What?
Exactly.
Jabron, the reason why I brought that up was because of the Leo Santa Cruz fight last night. I thought Miguel was way overmatched. I don't see, other than just in name only, I don't really see, what that really did for Leo or Miguel. I mean, everybody knew that Leo was a way better class fighter. So, I mean, what did we expect to happen? We thought Miguel was going to go out there and all of a sudden beat Leo? Of course not. At least not the hardcore boxing fan. So what does it mean when you're a multiple champion when you don't base like Elizabeth like Melissa was saying, you don't face your mandatory. You got an interim champ, and then you got a diamond champ after him. You got a 10 after him. I mean, are we watering down the sport too much for the casual fan?
Yeah. I mean, the casual fan, when they watch a fight, they just see somebody coming in there with a belt or getting a belt. They don't know actually what's the significance of that belt. There's Canelo at 160. He was a champ at 160. And then you had Andre, that's a champ at 160. And then you have the guy from Japan, the Bob Arum guy. So it's like, well, hold up. Who's the middleweight champion then? Like, who exactly is the champ? But I'm so glad that we're getting closer in the heavyweight division to having, as Deontay Wilder say, one face, one name, and that's Deontay Wilder. Hopefully we will get that, soon with the winner of the Joshua Ruiz, depending on how that turns out, especially if it's Ruiz and we can get Wilder in there with Ruiz, they're on the same side of the street. Hey, man, that would be a great thing to have an undisputed heavyweight champion, something that, some of these millennials never seen.
Yeah, I agree with you. And whether Tyson Fury actually goes back into the ring as a heavyweight again, we'll see. Because we don't know really how seriously damaged he was by the last fight. And with all his, WWE or whatever the heck other stuff he's doing, we'll see how that all goes.
But when all these different streaming companies and venues have given each one of these fighters a contract for so many fights, for instance, Canelo, $360 million, I think it was 10 fights, 11 fights. Tyson Fury, I believe he has an 8-bout deal. And then you have, Deontay Wilder that doesn't necessarily have a deal with one in particular. But then you got Joshua, who's got a deal with Eddie Hearn. So, I would like to see a unification, but the only way I think that could happen is if Luis beats Joshua again. If Joshua wins, I think we'll be once again at an impasse because nobody is going to put those contracts, especially with the kind of money that they were paying them. I don't think they're going to put those contracts at risk. Professor, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know, man. Right now, these networks are trying to, jogging for position. So you never know what can happen when they throw out that bag of money.
Well, I think some of it's going to be what the numbers are. I mean, what kind of numbers they're getting on these fights. And what all the hype really is going to look like. I mean, I will say this. Wilder last night, he looked the best that he's ever looked in the ring. He fought smartly. He wasn't wild. He bided his time. I mean, he had a level of maturity to his game I've never seen. And so that was very exciting to me. And the fact that he had that one-punch power was just crazy. So I think there's a real opportunity to make a fortune on a super fight. And as you say, you know, it'll be hard for the money guys to resist that. So we'll see what happens in the next fight between AJ and Ruiz and take it from there. And then, of course, there's we'll see whether Tyson Wilder 2 actually happens. We'll see what all of that looks like.
How were you guys with the scores when you found out the two judges had Wilder behind 59-55? And the other judge had him behind 58-56. Melissa, what were your thoughts on that?
I saw that. I didn't have a problem with that at all because he was really hanging back and playing it very smart and very, very coolly in those early rounds. I might have had it slightly closer, but not really, because he wasn't doing. Wilder wasn't putting out a lot, and Ortiz was really having a very solid game. He had a very nice active jab. He made some nice combinations, and he had a very nice defensive aspects. I just thought that Wilder was taking his time and seeing where the openings were, and as I thought, taking it very coolly and fighting a very mature fight. So I did not have an issue with the scoring.
What about you, Jabron?
I think those scores are a little bit too close. I had Ortiz winning pretty much every round.
Yeah, well, that's how he was up.
Until he got knocked out.
Six rounds over seven or five out of seven. Yeah, that was right to me.
Well, they had him winning five out of six. 59-55.
Yeah.
Do you think when it comes to boxing, do you think that this was actually the first time that you've seen Deontay actually exhibit some patience in the ring, even though it was still, that power that served him well, that right hand? But it didn't seem to me like he panicked like he used to, such as during that first fight when he got hurt by Ortiz, or even when he didn't get hurt, when he would just seem to fight, angry without purpose. Whereas this fight, I thought he was a much more purposeful fighter. You want to take that, Jabron, and then pass it on to Melissa?
Well, I can say in the first fight, Wilder was coming back from injury and he was dealing with the flu. Whereas he had a good camp this time, no injuries, no major bangs and bruises. Nobody's 100%. But he didn't have any major issues coming into this fight. He had a nice amount of rest in between his last fight leading up to now. So I think him being able to focus more on technical aspect of his game instead of rehabbing as in the first fight is like it gave him a lot more confidence and ease in the fight, even being down on the cards and Ortiz having some success in the fight.
Melissa?
Yeah, I agree. I as I said, I thought he fought a very mature fight. he didn't get allow himself to get brought in. He was didn't allow his emotions to take over at all. He was very smart, and he also had a tactical, you know, he had a strategic thing in mind. You know, you can't get away from the fact that Ortiz is 40, and I think he knew that by if he's taking him into the later rounds, he'd have much more opportunity to really wield his power. I think he was just taking his time. He was relaxed throughout the fight. He wasn't doing any antics. He was just totally in it. He was totally focused. I've already said it. I was very, very impressed in a way that I have never been impressed with him before. It was the first time I ever really, truly saw him boxing.
Now, staying in that heavyweight division and still taken away from Deontay Wilder's performance, do you think this fight will have an effect on Anthony Joshua going into his fight? Because if we rewind back time, Deontay Wilder had his Dominique Brazil spectacular knockout a couple of weeks prior to Joshua going into his fight. And for him going into the rematch, putting on a great performance, and now Joshua going into a rematch and wanting to avenge his loss and live up to, you know, a fan expectation, do the both of you think this will play a factor on that fight? Starting with you, Melissa.
That's an interesting question. You know, I think it's really two things. If Joshua is overprepared, it'll have too much of an effect. And what I mean by that is if he's overtrained to kind of be ready for Ruiz, I think it will have an effect because he's going to want to have an even it's going to sort of play on him to have an even better performance, to at least be on par with what Wilder showed. Not only does he have to win, but he needs to be, you know, have people say, wow, what a great performance. Wow, that was really great boxing, and have some kind of, you know, just getting away with winning on the cards is not going to be good enough, I think, for him. You know, he's still a young guy, and the loss was quite really hurt him, not so much in the ring, but just psychologically, I think it really hurt him. And while he's, at least some of the video that I've seen of him, he looks loose, he looks quick, he looks fast. He's got a lot of good lateral movement and so on. But if he's, like, overly keyed, I think it will have an effect on him. Because certainly, you know, at this point, Wilder's it. Even though Tyson Fury is a good fighter and has done very well, I think that all of the interest and all of the eyes have got to be on Wilder now because of his performance against because of his performance last night. And as you rightly point out, having it be just 2 weeks before his own fight, it's got. I agree with you. I think it's going to be in his mind.
Oh, most definitely. I think it's going to be in his mind. I don't think Joshua is a mental giant. I think actually, you know, if when he looks at Wilder's performance and he looks at his performance against Ruiz, he looks at the way Ruiz is coming off the training camp. I think this is all going to play in Joshua's head. And he's going to get Wilder knocked Ortiz out in seven. He's going to want to knock Ruiz out in five. Four,
seven, right.
He's the better guy. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of hype on Joshua, and I'm not sure if he can stand up under the pressure. But Melissa, I know we have to let you go because you always press me. But we do have two women's fights coming on. You mentioned Cecilia Breakers. She's going to be fighting, I believe, on the 30th, isn't it?
Yeah, and she's going to be fighting on the 30th. And then we've got Hannah Rankin, who's fighting super middleweight. She's a champion out of Scotland. Her fight is also coming on the 30th. And of course, the Claressa Shields super welterweight fight is back on for January 10th on Showtime. You know, next time we're on, we can talk about that. There's a lot of big doings in women's boxing. There were a lot of championship fights over the weekend, fights mostly out of the country, in Canada, in Mexico. So a lot of really sensational fighters going on. And then, you know, we have to look forward to the Olympic trials for men and elite men and elite women, American men and women. So that'll be coming up fairly soon. So we'll have a lot to talk about the United States amateur program and what's happening with that, and such things as the fact that the Olympics is allowing professionals to fight, which I find to be absolutely horrible. We can talk about that at some point in the not-too-distant future. And the fact that they will not allow any of the judges from 2016 to judge the 2020 fights in the Olympics because of what was perceived as a lot of corruption in the scoring. So lots to talk about as we round out the year.
All right, Melissa, make sure you tell everybody where they can find you and give us your final thoughts.
All right, well, I wish everyone and the both of you and everyone listening a really wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. We have a lot to be grateful for. And in terms of social media, you can find me at Girl Boxing Now on Instagram and Twitter, and on Facebook at Girl Boxing. And again, everyone have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you so much for this.
Okay, thank you. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Well, Jabron, you know what I want to talk about? I want to talk about the press conference.
About what?
I want to talk about the press conference.
Which one?
The press conference. Jamal Charlo and Tony Harris. I want to talk about the black hat. So, what kind of beef you got when I beat you on your card? You was the headliner. What's your beef? I thought that was pretty good myself.
It's like Charlo, man. That smack talking is just not his game.
Yeah, you.
And I think he's gonna emotionally go into the fight and try to knock him out, and the same outcome is gonna happen. He's gonna end up getting outboxed because he's instead of fighting with his head.
Do you think that? Well, I just put it out there bluntly like I did before. What did you think about so much use of the N-word? I'm old school, so, you know, smack talk, playing the dozens and all that stuff. I mean, you know, back in the day, I played my shit, got my little butt beat on the way home from school once or twice, so Yeah, I engaged in all that. But when you see two, you know, a Mexican and Puerto Rican, you know, fighting, you don't hear one calling one a spit and one calling one. I mean, not, you know, maybe you don't understand the language. Maybe they are. I don't know. I don't speak either language. But I'm just saying, you know, from a personal point of view, from respect, what did you think that it's just something that we have been so anesthetized to that we don't understand it, but for the rest of the boxing world, it perhaps is a turnoff?
It can be, especially when and some of those press conferences and things, in those settings, the minorities is minorities. You know, they're not the most dominant in the room. So it'll definitely make someone uncomfortable. Especially in the politically correct society that we're in today.
But, I mean, you know, like, if we had seen something like that between, say, Melissa Shields and one of her, do we hold women to a different standard than we do boxing, you know, men in these press conferences?
I'm trying to get your drift there. You with the Clarissa Shield comparison.
Well, no. What I'm saying is, you know, any women's boxing. They talk their smack talk, but they don't make it quite as personal. If you understand what I'm saying, you know, it doesn't get to that level of Charlo's. You know, even in spite of the marketing.
Well, I get your drift now. Yeah. I get your drift now. I feel because the women are a lot more passionate about it and more respectful because it's like they're fighting to win. You get what I'm saying? They're not thinking about, oh, let me sell this fight. Let me, you know what I'm saying, try to promote this and this, da, 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 da. No, they're just passionate. Like, they just want to go in there and fight. They're not thinking about if they got an undefeated record because most of them don't have an undefeated record. So it's a little different. With the men, you know, they're trying to be the cash cow. They're trying to be at the king of the mountain and you know, the golden child and golden boy. So it's a little bit different. They're trying to get those big mega bucks and contracts and networks and different things of that sort, whereas women aren't on that level. But once those purses start going up and they're demanding more of them, then you'll see a lot more antics and things of that sort because they have to sell the fight. They got to get butts in seats.
Okay. Why doesn't that work for women boxers, but work for women that are engaged in MMA? Because they do their smack talking.
Well, MMA is a little different, you know, because with that, it's like they're selling themselves. They're trying to get, like, those different type of endorsements and things of that sort compared to where the women in boxing, they have their promoters, and then depending on their promoters, it's like what networks they're on. And what type of deal they have. Whereas like UFC is like you're your self promoter.
The only reason I'm asking is because, you know, we got Tyson Fury now. He's over here. Supposedly he's going to train with Conor McGregor. Another time you see him with the WWE guys. I see the same thing I asked Melissa. Do you think that, you know, he has too many balls in the air at one time? Because right now, it's more, to me, now maybe I'm wrong, it's more about marketing himself rather than really worrying about being, you know, fighting the best that the heavyweight world has to offer. I think, especially in his case, being adopted by Las Vegas and you know that kind of whole entertainment type of pull, which he's good in. I'm not, you know, knocking his monetary worth, but I do think it's going to lead to lesser opponents until it's time that he thinks for him to make that cash cow move, which would be Deontay Wilder.
Nah, but the fight in February.
but is it signed?
Yeah, they already got the date.
Oh, well, I know they got a date. Supposed to, what is it, February 20th, right?
It's like February 22nd or so.
Okay.
Yeah, that deal is in the bag. That's it. Unless Tyson Fury try to find some way to back out the fight.
I wouldn't be surprised about an injury, maybe a hand or a foot, something like that. But we'll see. Speaking of, let's go over some of the things we got coming up. Andy Ruiz, Anthony Joshua. We've already kind of talked about it. Do you think there's going to be any change? Does Anthony Joshua get his revenge? Does Andy Ruiz get his setup for Mega Fight with Deontay? Or what's up?
All I know, I cannot wait till next week, the leading up to the fight, because I want to see those press members going to be asking Joshua about Deontay Wilder and then how he handled those questions. You know, they'll be asking, hey, did you get to see the fight? What was your thoughts on it? You know, different things, because and how he reacts to it, because we're starting to see this different Joshua all of a sudden. Now he's talking smack and I feel like he's trying to hype himself up. That's just my opinion.
Well, now, do you think, now, remember, he knocked Ruiz down in that first fight. Ruiz got back up, knocked him out. How much of when you start talking about psychological effects, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, when you hit a guy with a good shot and he get back up and put something on you, you know, that will definitely do something to you. And speaking of that, did you get the chance to see One Night produced by Sylvester Stallone?
The what?
It's called One Night. It's a documentary leading up to the Joshua fight, and it was produced by Sylvester Stallone is on DAZN YouTube page, and if you're a DAZN subscriber, you can also watch it in the app.
I got to watch it in the app because I sure didn't watch it.
Oh, man, you missed a good one. This was a great, great production on the commentary, the narrating. He got former fighters in it, you know, Jerry Cooney, Tyson, Holyfield, Sugar Ray. You got Michael Strahan. You got Paulie. It was a great production. You got different angles of the fight. He break the fight down round by round, what's going through their heads. I mean, great production. My hat goes off to Sylvester Stallone on that piece of work.
Oh, hey, Stallone has always shown that he's been a great director, especially when it comes to sports type of films. I actually got a chance to watch all of the fight. What was it? Fight camp. I finally got a chance to watch all of those before the fight. And I also thought that they did a very good job. What do you think? A lot of people are, you know, once again, I don't know, maybe it's a crowd, maybe it's, you know, just people just wanting to have something to say. But once again, you know, you're hearing the rumblings, you know, PVC didn't do this, PVC does that. What were your thoughts generally on the PVC coverage of boxing since they started this PVC series?
I mean, I think it's good coverage. I still think a lot of their fighters need to be more active. You know, I need to get some of those guys more active. But overall, I mean, he's putting out a lot of content on different platforms and giving people opportunities. And, I think it's good for boxing. I'm not saying that he's doing it perfect, but, he's doing a fairly good job. And it's brought a lot of casual fans to the sport.
Oh, yeah, you know, I definitely think they're doing a good job, especially on my Saturdays when, sports is all over TV. You can watch college football here. You can watch, bull riding. You can watch boxing. There's a great variety. I think they make their fighters very accessible. But like you said, they should make them as accessible in the ring as they do for their broadcast. Finally, what did you think about Abner Morris making his comeback? I believe he said late February, early March.
I think he need a warm-up fight. He's talking. He want to jump right into a big fight. I don't think that would be smart coming off that type of injury. And after putting on an excessive amount of weight, I think you would want to shake some of that rust off, get your timing back, and seeing how your eye reacts to the new surgery-prepared orbital.
Yeah, he is a little chubby to say the least. The last time they showed him on the PVC, I'm really looking forward to seeing him back in the ring. But like you said, let's take the warm up first.
Speaking of getting back in the ring, what are your thoughts on Mayweather making an announcement of coming out of retirement and having two fights next year?
Man, please. Who's he going to fight? Who's he going to fight? He's going to fight another MMA guy? Is he, Is he going to come out to fight Pacquiao? Is he going to come out to fight? You know, I mean, until I actually see Mayweather make a ring walk, I'm not buying. I'm not buying. I think, you know, just like you talk about the, I think Mayweather knows that he's a legend. And I don't think that you know, I mean, he's going to do what legends do. He's going to tease us, but I don't think he's ever going to let the polish come off. I think he's a much smarter businessman than that.
Well, it seems Bud heard it and tried to jump on it, and he's the first to call him out. What's your thoughts on Bud and Mayweather?
I really can't think of too many guys that can't beat Mayweather that are on the top of their game. I think Bud, nobody is now going to let Mayweather run all over the ring. These guys here, most of them, they know how to cut off the ring. They know how to throw a jab, and I just don't see Mayweather, you know, I mean, if you grew quicker with age, you know, then I'd be running the 9-800 right now, and I don't think that's going to happen. I'm just saying, you know, I mean, you know, I might get struck by lightning or something, but other than that, no. You know, I mean, you know, and I think Mayweather has enough money coming out. If by some chance he has not settled that little tax thing that he's gotten and things like that, then he might have to. But other than that, I would like to think that, you know, after all of these guys that we've seen go through, you know, being broke after making millions of dollars, I would have to think that after all the money that Mayweather has made, you know, and I don't care what he bet, you know, he should still have that $360 million he got from fighting Connor. You know, I mean, but hey. We all know fast life, but whatever. No, I really don't put a whole lot of confidence in seeing Mayweather come back. Do you?
Nah. Like you say, you got to believe it when I see it.
So, I know we didn't get a chance to catch you last week, but what were some of your thoughts on some of the past bouts that we didn't get a chance to talk about? We also had, of course, Michael Hunter's trainer on. They're going to be on the undercard. He's going to be fighting Povetkin on the undercard of the Andy Ruiz fight. So we talked a little bit about Michael Hunter. And just your thoughts on some of the fights that you've seen, some of the ones that are coming up, and kind of catch us up on what's been happening with the professor.
Well, a fight over the weekend that we haven't touched on was the Kellum Smith versus John Ryder fight. A tougher fight than probably Kellum Smith and his team was probably expecting. And it seems that Canelo responded to Kellum Smith a victory and is basically saying he's ready. So it's looking like we possibly could have that fight, Kellum Smith versus Canelo at 168, and that would be another belt that Canelo will be picking up. So did you get to see that fight? And if you did, what's your thoughts on it? And if you didn't, still, what you think of that matchup between Canelo and Kellum?
Well, I wasn't – when you talk about judging – I was kind of puzzled by the score there. I think the fight was a lot closer than what it was made up to be. As far as a matchup between Callum and Canelo, I can definitely see the fight being made. I don't, from what I've seen of Callum, from I don't think that he would give Canelo that much of a stiff fight, stiff competition. I mean, I know it sounds good and looks good, you know, England, Mexico, I can definitely see the fight being made, but once again, I think Canelo, Golden Boy, you have to commend them on their matchmaking ability, and they make sure that Canelo gets a fight that are exciting enough, but yet and still, I don't think their fights that actually put him in danger.
I agree. I think he'll probably get Callum out of there.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. I mean, you know, it's just like they picked Sergio. Just like they picked Kovalev, then you know they're doing the same thing here. I mean, you know, fights. I don't think that we're going to see Canelo take fights, especially the next four or five, at least four. That's going to put him in any danger, and the fights that would put him in danger, I don't think that they generate enough financial for him to really take seriously, because they're more they're too, you know, what is it, too high risk for low reward. You know, I mean, at 168, 160, you have some guys down there. I'm sure there's a ton of guys that would love to fight Cato Smith.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with what you were saying, piggybacking off of what you were saying. I agree.
Yeah. So, do you see any danger for Jamal? He's going to be defending his title against Dennis Hogan. What do you think of that matchup?
I don't know. I gotta do a little homework on Hogan, but from what I'm hearing, Hogan isn't an opponent that you could just overlook. So, you know, looking at Jamal's last fight versus Corbaugh, you know, hey, that was a fight that was very competitive and a fight he probably wasn't expecting himself. So, I mean, I would just say make sure you tune in and it possibly could be a good fight.
If Charlo keeps, if they keep both concentrating on Tony Harrison, it's just possible that Dennis Hogan could be.
Nah. That's a different Charlo. This is Jamal.
No. You didn't hear what I said. I said if both of them. Don't stop worrying about what's happening with Tony, because Jamal is just as engaged as Jamel. And if he doesn't watch out, Hogan could be possibly his Tony Harris. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay, I got it.
Because first of all, not that you just can't take any opponent lightly, but and another thing I don't understand, because I know you explained this to me one time. Machado has a WBC middleweight title. Now, how many middleweights, how many titles are there? Because isn't Chris Eubank also fighting for an interim middleweight title on the same card, the WBA?
But I think that's at 68, right?
Well, but both of them. Wait, hold on. I'm looking it up. Okay. It says December 7th, New York Showtime. Title fight, Jamal Charlo versus Dennis Hogan for Charlo's WBC middleweight title.
Okay.
And right under it says Chris Eubank Jr. versus Matt Kovarov. 12 rounds for the vacant WBA interim middleweight title.
Oh. So he is fighting at 160. Right, because Kovarov, that's the guy that Charlo just fought.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So are we setting up maybe a unification between Charlo and Chris Eubank Jr.?
Yeah, but that's an interim belt, though.
What?
Hey.
Interim mandatory? Does it really make any difference anymore?
Yeah. Yeah, they could. They definitely could possibly match up. And that would be a very interesting fight.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. But like I said, he better make sure he does his homework on Hogan first. And I'm sure they're going to make sure that he looks a whole lot better than he did the last time.
Right.
Anything else you want to cover before we get up out of here, man, and wish everybody a happy and safe Thanksgiving?
Nah, just, be safe for the holidays and get ready to count down to Joshua versus Ruiz 2. I'm excited. I can't wait. As I brought up, please tune in to The Zone. Subscribe to The Zone, and you can go to their YouTube page and check out the One Night special produced by Sylvester Stallone. Is a great look, and you support boxing.
Well, hey, look for a big announcement from Team Certified when it comes. It should be out Friday. There should be a big announcement about the Sturgis bike event. So look for us to make our mark and finally get our own show. This is a show that'll be sponsored by a motorcycle club. And Sturgis, if you know, this would be a very somewhat of a it'll break records as well as establish relationships between different groups that people probably aren't aware of. Once again, be sure to tune to K9 and I Tuesday We're going to have Jake Smith on. He'll be talking about what's going on in amateur boxing down there in the Maryland D.C. circle. Also, K-9 will be talking about his son and their how they're working their way through the amateurs and hopefully to get a Olympic berth. So our thoughts and prayers go out to the champ tonight. He's at the hospital with his wife. She was having some heart palpitations and whatnot, so we hope that wasn't too serious. And our thoughts and prayers go out to the champ. So we thank everyone for listening tonight. Have a great night and have a great week. Talk to you next week. Have a great one, everyone. Whoa.